Hi, my name is Pam Colleen, and welcome to my podcast, Circadian Reboot, where we discuss everything circadian. And today I'm thrilled to announce on the show that we have Dr. Magda Havas, PhD. She is a professor emerita at Trent University's School of Environment in Peterborough, Canada. An environmental toxicologist, she has devoted her career to understanding the impact of chemical pollutants and the biological effects of electromagnetic frequencies, EMFs, spanning extremely low frequency electromagnetic fields to ultraviolet radiation. Dr. Havas has a particular focus on electrohypersensitivity, working to support individuals affected by this condition and advising the healthcare community on its assessment and management. She is also the co-author of three books and authored more than 180 publications, including peer-reviewed scientific articles, book chapters, open letters, and pieces in popular media. In addition to her research on EMF-related issues, Dr. Havas explores the therapeutic potential of pulsed electromagnetic fields, vibrational therapy, and light therapy. She serves as a science advisor to several nonprofit organizations, including the Canadian Initiative to Stop Wireless Electric and Electromagnetic Pollution, WEEP Initiative, it's called. Her work continues to shape public understanding of environmental health challenges and inspire solutions for creating healthier environments.
Thank you for joining me today, Magda. It's so nice to have you here. I've been watching your career now for so many years and all the wonderful work you've done with these non-native EMFs. I think to platform off on this subject, what I want to do is I want to go back in time and talk to you about two things. I wouldn't mind if you would talk to us a little bit about the work of Robert O. Becker and the body electric. And I would also love the audience to hear about your experiences when you had this epiphany, learning about this stray voltage, this stray electricity that's in our air. I remember going to Trent University and watching you do a demo on the stage where you actually showed people using a fluorescent lamp how stray this electricity can be. So if you don't mind, if we can talk a little bit about these two pieces of history before we get into some of the more nuts and bolts of the topic.
Okay. Well, Robert O. Becker is one of my heroes. He's passed, but he wrote two books, Body Electric and Cross Currents, and they're both well worth reading. Some of the Body Electric is also in Cross Currents, but Cross Currents goes beyond that and talks about the harmful types of electromagnetic energy. And basically, he was interested in, he did some experiments with salamanders and frogs. And he was an orthopedic surgeon, and he was dealing with veterans who had lost limbs. And when it comes to salamanders, if you snip off their fingers or digits or even their hand or foot in this case, it regenerates. It grows right back. All the digits come back. But when you do that to a frog, so if you cut off the digits of a frog's foot, it won't come back. It'll just turn into a stump. And he was really curious as to find out why some species can regenerate and others can't. And obviously, he was hoping that there would be some benefit to humans with his research. And one of the things he found is that when you look at the junction between, like when you have a cut and you look at the junction at the skin surface, with the salamanders, there was an electrical, a negative electrical potential between the nerve and the skin. And it sort of went through a cycle and it regenerated. But when he looked at the frog, it never went to a negative potential, which was really interesting. So then he introduced electrons, basically. And he got the stump to grow a little bit, but he wasn't able to fully get it into digits. So he realized it had something to do with the electricity at the site of the injury. And back then, there was quite a bit of research. Dr. Bassett, there were other people doing this kind of research, and they found that when you had a bone fracture and it was non-union, which means the bones weren't together, you know, there could be a break or a fracture in it. But when they were actually physically separated, they simply did not heal. And so one of the things they did is then they introduced an electrode into the body right at the location of the fracture, introduced this electric current, and the bones began to grow towards each other. So they began to fuse. And this was an invasive type of surgery, but it worked and it was really worthwhile doing. Then Becker realized that if you took that same area and simply put a coil around it and introduced an electric field by a coil without actually penetrating into the skin, the same thing happened. And this became very popular. It's used today. It was basically, you know, developed in the 1970s. So that's 50 years ago now. And then they found out that this kind of injury, whether it was soft tissue injury, could have the same effect. So they began to do soft tissue injuries, improving the amount of the rate of healing, which was really, really powerful. And now they're doing that, as you know, with light therapy. So you could have, you know, if you've had some sort of, let's say, a bruise on your foot, you've stubbed your toe and there's a huge bruise there. When it comes to your feet, it's really hard. It takes a long time for things to heal because of the circulation. But you introduce the red light to it and it will heal within a matter of minutes. So there's a, and light is electromagnetic energy. So it's just an offshoot of what they were doing originally. And, you know, when I read his book, Body Electric and Cross Currents, this was totally new to me. I had no idea about any of this and was totally fascinated. What I did know at the time was some of the harmful effects of being exposed to electromagnetic frequencies, particularly radio frequency radiation, but also low frequencies. And then something interesting happened. I was doing some research looking at electric and magnetic fields in different communities. And we know that electric and magnetic fields are generated by power lines. And there was some research being done at the time showing that children who live near a high voltage power line had a greater risk of dying from leukemia. And there was one study that came out in 1979 by Wertheimer and Leeper. And initially it was just ignored by the community because this was such an unusual concept that no one ever thought of it. And then it turned out that other people started replicating the study. And Dr. Sabatz, who was well known in this field for particularly occupational exposure, he repeated it in Denver, Colorado, using the exact same method that Wertheimer Leeper used. And he was able to replicate it. And he found the same thing, that there was an increased risk of children dying from leukemia if they lived near close to one of these power lines. And later on, the research turned out that if you had a high magnetic field on the pipes, your water pipes, that was associated with the leukemia. So they thought some of it was actually coming through the ground and coming up through water pipes. Anyway, I'm trying to make a long story short. I can go off in multiple directions, but to make a long story short, we published our study on electric and magnetic fields in different communities. We did 60 communities just to see what the levels were and how much they differed. And it was written up in the Globe and Mail. And I got a phone call from a woman in Toronto who told me that her daughter was electrically hypersensitive and that she had just started going to a school. She was had attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and a few other issues. And she was going to a private school. And she found that when her daughter went to the school, she became really ill. And she had to come home at lunchtime and slept all afternoon. So she wasn't able to get a good education. And the mother had heard about something called dirty electricity, which I hadn't heard of at the time. And she heard this from a niece in Wisconsin. And the niece in Wisconsin was also electrically sensitive. And they had plugged these filters, special filters designed to remove dirty electricity into the home. And that seemed to relieve her symptoms. And so this woman in Toronto ordered the filters, put them in the house, and her daughter's health improved. Her husband felt better. She felt better. She had two dogs that were misbehaving a lot, and they just calmed down completely. So she was convinced that there was dirty electricity in the school, and she wanted to plug filters into the school to help her daughter so she could actually participate. And this was before we had Wi-Fi. So we're not dealing with radio frequency radiation in the school. This was before smartphones or iPhones were popular. So we were really dealing with just low frequency electric and magnetic fields and dirty electricity at the time. she got permission from the principal to install these filters. And she said, the reason I'm contacting you is I'd like you to do a study at the school, because I think more people at the school, not just my daughter, will benefit. And I'd like it documented. And at the time, I was very skeptical. I didn't know very much about dirty electricity. I thought the filters were bogus. You know, I'm sort of skeptical to begin with. But I was so impressed with this mother wanting so much to help her daughter. And that really moves me. And she was paying for all the filters. She was paying for everything. And I thought, well, we could do a study. And if it doesn't show anything, that's useful from a scientific perspective. So I was not expecting to get any positive results at all. And one of the things that was limiting our ability to get positive results, even if the filters worked, was at the time we thought maybe 3% of the population was electrosensitive. And there were less than 40 teachers in the school. So, you know, 3% of 40 is a very small number. And I thought, well, you know, we really don't have the power in the school, but we'll do it and see what happens. So we did the study. It lasted 6 weeks. We did 2 weeks before the filters were installed, 3 weeks with the filters, and then another week afterwards, because we didn't want a seasonal effect to interfere with the results. And we got the results done. The teachers completed a wellness questionnaire at the end of the day and a behavior questionnaire on the students at the end of each day, which took about 2 minutes. So we made it very, very easy for them to participate. And when I started analyzing the results, I was amazed at what we were getting. And I thought, I must have made a mistake somewhere. So I analyzed them about three different times, trying to figure out where my mistake was. And what we were finding is that about 65% of the teachers in the school benefited while the filters were in. And this didn't relate to the level of electrosensitivity. So my concept now is that many more people are electrically sensitive than you might imagine. And they're reacting to this poor power quality, the sturdy electricity that's riding on electrical wires.
And just the percentage, I know you talk about the percentage and the varying degrees of electrosensitivity. So how many of us are mildly, moderately, or severely affected by this dirty electricity?
Well, whether it's dirty electricity or some other form of electromagnetic pollution, I don't really differentiate between the two. In this particular case, it was a very high percentage that benefited. But I normally think that maybe up to 3% of the population are severely affected, meaning that they could not be in that school teaching because they would become too ill. So these people are really disabled by their extreme sensitivity. And then I think about another 30%, and this is after we did the study in the school, I think another 30% are mild to moderately sensitive. And that number keeps changing over time. And I think it might even be higher than that now, simply because we're exposed to so much more radiation with 5G, with smart meters, with everyone using cell phones, or almost everyone using cell phones. There's so much radiation in our environment at home, in school, at work, that more and more people are reaching their limit and they're going over it, and hence they're developing the symptoms. So
yeah,
I can't give you an exact number, but all I say is, and this is a conservative estimate, at least a third of the population has some degree of sensitivity. And there are others will say we're all sensitive. And I agree with that, because we're actually electromagnetic beings. We don't think of ourselves like that, but we are electromagnetic beings. Every cell in our body has an electrical potential across the cell membrane. Our nervous system, our heart, our brain is all running on electricity. So we are electromagnetic beings, but the medical profession hasn't really recognized that to the degree that is coming in the very near future. We're learning more and more about this.
It's like we can see cigarette smoke and we can smell it and we know it's not good for us, right? But what you're talking about here is intangible. It's invisible. So I think a lot of people, you know, poo-poo the idea that this is adversely affecting our health, because it's happening at such a tiny molecular level and we don't see it or smell it.
That's right. And then it's hard, because of that, it's hard to recognize that this might actually be affecting us. Also, unfortunately, our government and the government in a lot of other countries, the United States, Britain, Australia, they don't recognize this as a serious problem. if anything, there have guidelines that don't protect us at all. I mean, the guidelines are so ludicrously high that you wonder, you know, how could they possibly continue to stand by them? And I think the answer to that is that they're being pressured by the telecom industry. You know, they're incredibly powerful. They probably get funding from them to some degree. Certainly the media gets funded by them. And so they're reluctant to share information that might damage the telecom industry. But eventually,
they could actually, I mean, they could remediate some of this on their own if they would improve their technology so that it's not as invasive for us at a cellular level. But the cost of their products would probably go up. So is that part of the deterrent, why they don't help us out a little bit more here?
No, I don't think the cost of their product would go up. And as a matter of fact, I think this year there was a paper that came out on how cell phones could be improved so that they didn't emit that much radiation. I'm not opposed to people using cell phones, but I think there's a safer way of using them. And no one's doing, or very few people are doing that unless they're in the know. And very often when people come, you know, and tell me, and I get these calls all the time, that they're electrically sensitive, they're reacting to everything, their life is falling apart. Their family and their family doctor may or may not accept what they're saying. And some of them feel that they're going crazy. And it's not until they start reading some of the information that's on the web that they recognize this is what's happening to me. And then they start searching for answers and they start sharing them. So they've become incredibly valuable in spreading information.
And you say there's a really simple way, really, if you're suspicious that you're electrochemically sensitive, there's a simple way to test yourself. If you turn your circuits off in your house, then let's say you start to feel better after you're not exposed to electricity, or let's say you go into the forest and there's hopefully no non-native EMFs and you feel better in the middle of a forest. I mean, these might be clues that you are reacting to some of this dirty electricity or all this ionizing radiation.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the things I recommend, exactly what you just said, Pam. I ask them to turn the electricity off in their home at nighttime when they're going to sleep, except for their, you know, fridge and freezer kind of thing. And do that for a few days and see if you sleep better, see if you feel better. And if you do notice the difference, then chances are you're quite electrosensitive, because some people won't notice the difference even though their body's healing. And sometimes if you're hypersensitive, it takes you a long time to recover. So you can eliminate the radiation and you won't feel anything for a while because your body is still reacting to what it's been exposed to, and it's taking you longer to respond. And if you go out into the forest, if you, you know, go for a walk in a park where there's no Wi-Fi everywhere and there's no cell towers, if you feel good, chances are, you know, you're electrically sensitive and you're benefiting from the natural earth frequencies that might be shielded to a certain degree within your own home.
Now, what can people do that is essentially free, at no cost, to try and minimize their exposure to some of this unhealthy electricity? There must be some things that are free or next to free.
There's quite a few things you can do. If you have Wi-Fi in your home, obviously you can turn it off. You know, right now we're communicating through the internet. I don't have Wi-Fi on. I'm completely wired. I expect you are as well. So you can be wired. You can put everything back onto wires, including your cell phone, believe it or not. So if you're using your cell phone from home, you can connect it to an Ethernet cable and you're fine. And if you go to, there's a website called the Electrosensitive Society. It's www.electrosensitivesociety.com. And they have an entire list of things that you can do, some of which are totally cost-free. The other thing you can do is you can move your bed away from things like electrical panels. If you have an electrical panel on the other side of your bedroom, that's going to affect you. So if you simply move your bed even a few feet away, that can make a difference. The key things that you're going to be exposed to in your home is electrical wiring. And if you have dirty electricity, then, you know, that's something you can't avoid unless you filter it. Wireless radiation, particularly Wi-Fi. Cordless phones are notorious in your home, because the cordless phones we have here in North America radiate 24/7, whether you're using the phone or not. The base station is radiating all the time. And it's so powerful that you can actually take your cordless phone, walk you know, to your neighbor's house, you know, three doors down, and you can still maintain the phone call. So it doesn't have to be that strong.
Even baby monitors. Baby monitors are very, very dangerous as well.
I agree. And you put that right by your infant. And the other one is usually, you know, with the mother on a belt or something so she can constantly be in touch. So it's hurting the mother and it's hurting the child. And the levels are usually that high that it hurts everyone in the home. So it's not just who's right close to it, but everyone in the home. And so I really recommend that you not use them or that you shield the crib from the radiation so that you can actually, you know, not harm the infant at the same time.
There's filters you talked about that you can buy. Now, this is obviously a cost. And over the years, I know you've done some research testing these filters. If people want to invest in them, that's fine. But I think what's really compelling is what you observed when people would add these filters to their home. This alludes to the story you told us earlier, but you've got countless testimonials just like that. I know I saw a video of a man who had what was Parkinson's disease or something like that. And after putting these filters in his house, how much better he was doing?
It was multiple sclerosis. we've actually published this research. You're out of focus, Pam. I don't know if you noticed that at all.
I know my camera does that every so often, so I apologize. We'll just keep going.
So we've done research and we published it with objective evidence. So we've got diabetics. Some diabetics are electrohypersensitive as well. And we found that with these diabetics, if you remove the dirty electricity in their home, and this was once again before Wi-Fi, so it might not have as severe an effect if you still have a lot of other types of radiation. But if you remove the dirty electricity in their home, their blood sugar goes down and they require much less insulin if they're type 1 diabetics. We did a study with a woman in New York. She was a type 2 diabetic. She didn't take medication. She controlled her blood sugar with diet and with exercise. So when her blood sugar was high after a meal, for example, she would go for a 20-minute walk and it came right back down. And she measured it all the time so she knew what her levels were. And days that she didn't feel like going outside for a walk or, you know, it was raining or it was dark or, you know, for whatever reason, she would walk on a treadmill. And when she walked on a treadmill for 20 minutes at the same pace as she would walk outside, her blood sugar actually went up. And this is totally unexpected because you're consuming energy, you're using up sugar. So why should your blood sugar go up? And my hypothesis is that if you're electrosensitive, your body is stressed. And when a diabetic's body is stressed, in all of us, we release blood, we release sugar into our body because we're going to have to fight or run or do something. And so their blood sugar actually goes up. Now, if doctors knew about this, they would warn their patients not to work out on electrical equipment like a treadmill because it might adversely affect their body, which in this particular case, it did. We also worked with children who were type 1 diabetics. We worked with elderly people who were type 1 diabetics. And they required much, much less insulin when their home was filtered than before their home was filtered. So some percentage, and I don't know what that percentage is, but some percentage of the diabetic population is also electrosensitive. And hence, they have to really be aware of the environment they're in. I have a colleague who was pre-diabetic. And he found that whenever he worked near high voltage transmission lines or power lines, his blood sugar would go up. And if he was in a clean environment, it would go down. And he went to his doctor to find out, you know, because they were thinking of prescribing insulin for him. And his blood sugar was very high. He was waiting in the doctor's office and his blood sugar was very high. And the doctor said, well, we're going to have to put you on insulin. He said, but no, I think I'm reacting to your clinical environment, which has dirty electricity in it. And most places have it. So he said, let me sit out in my car for 20 minutes and I'll come in, take my blood sugar right away and see what happens. So he did. 20 minutes later, his blood sugar was normal. So doctors need to know about this. We put filters in an old folks home and there were a number of patients who were diabetic and we warned them. We said, when we put these filters in, please double check, triple check your diabetic patients who get insulin, you know, before they go to bed and, you know, in the morning, that kind of thing, and after food, I said, please check their blood sugar more regularly because it's likely to change. And the doctor who was on the premises just ignored us, thought we were crazy. And the nurses found that they had to go in and give sugar pills to some of the diabetics. They had to wake them up and give them sugar pills because their blood sugar was so low that they had to raise it because of the amount of insulin they got was too much and their blood sugar was regulating. So this is, you know, it's been repeated so many times, it's no longer a fallacy or just an anecdotal evidence.
And with the heart, of course, the heart is affected by electricity as well. And you've seen cases where people have heart palpitations in and around a lot of this dirty electricity as well. I mean, look at how many people are complaining about tachycardia or heart palpitations, and this can be due to some of this stray electricity.
Yeah, I agree with you entirely. When you know, I learn from the people that interact with me and give me their symptoms. And quite a few of them told me that sometimes they go shopping and they go into one of these large, you know, grocery stores or hardware stores, and they start having heart palpitations. They feel stressed. They thought it was being with people or something, like they didn't know why they were suddenly feeling like this. And many of them said they just go into the store, buy whatever they need, and get out as fast as they can. And so when they told me that they had this racing heart, I thought, oh, this is wonderful because we can measure it objectively. So we know how to measure heart rate and heart rate variability. And so we started working with people. I think we ended up testing about 75 people in total. And our first 25 were in Boulder, Colorado. And we were measuring their heart in an electromagnetically clean environment. And we placed a cordless phone base station, like they were lying down. We had them hooked up to a heart monitor and we had a base station, you know, just behind their head. And we plugged it in or unplugged it or plugged it into a dead out.
And they were blindfolded too, right?
They had no idea what was
plugged.
They didn't know when they were exposed. And not everyone, but a percentage of them developed an irregular heart rate, first of all. Some of them developed tachycardia, which is a heart rate greater than 100 beats per minute. And this is while they're not moving. They're just lying down. They're not moving. Some of them fell asleep during the experiment, and yet their heart reacted to this radiation. And we published that as well. And there's a 16x9 documentary where one of the subjects that we tested volunteered to be recorded live on air. And 16x9 came, they filmed everything, and he's lying there, he's got the monitor on. We turn on it was a Wi-Fi router in this particular case, we turn that on without him knowing. He was actually blindfolded, he had no idea when we were doing what. And as soon as we turned it on, he said, I feel something. And he explained what he felt. And then we could see it on the screen where his heart was just beating, going crazy. And then we unplugged it, and all of this is recorded. And the reporter went up to him, showed that there was nothing being emitted, you know. And she said, how do you feel, Martin? And he said, fine, I don't think anything's on. So, I mean, you can't ignore all of this kind of information. And when we look at heart rate variability, we get a sense of what's happening to the autonomic nervous system. And what we find is that the sympathetic part of the nervous system is upregulated. And this is our stress response. And it's, you know, it's fight, flight, or freeze, right? Those three things. And when the parasympathetic is dominant, this is our rest, digest, and heal. And so if we're never in parasympathetic, we can't heal. We can't rest, we can't sleep, and we can't digest. We have digestive issues. So all of these health concerns, the chronic health concerns we're experiencing, some percentage of them are simply due to the electromagnetic environment these people are living in.
And this affects sleep, which is something I'm very, very interested in. And that's the focus of my new website, is helping people with their sleep. You know, with all of this elevated cortisol, this interrupts your sleep. And then imbalance in blood sugar, of course, you're going to wake up, you can't fall back asleep again. You're constantly, like you said, you're in a sympathetic dominant state. And it's to an invisible source. So people are scratching their heads trying to figure out why they're not sleeping properly. And this is something maybe that they haven't investigated as yet.
And if they can't sleep, they're chronically tired, like they can't function normally. So it really affects your quality of life to a severe degree.
Now, have you had any luck petitioning the government? Have you seen any improvement in terms of their open-mindedness to this or the medical establishment? Is anybody listening to you, Magda?
When it comes to the medical establishment, I find that a lot of the naturopathic doctors, the alternative practitioners, are far more open than our sort of Western medical doctors. And there's a reason for that. And I'm not blaming the doctors. We have a healthcare system that is over-regulating our medical profession. If you stray outside of your lane, if you try something with your patients that has proven helpful in other conditions, but you're applying it to something novel, you can lose your medical license. So these people are afraid of losing their medical licenses. And some of the best doctors I know have lost their medical licenses because they put their patients first. And in my mind, when it comes to the relationship to your health, you and your doctor should be the two key players in that, not the government, not health insurance agencies, and certainly not the Canadian or the American Medical Association. They shouldn't be telling you what to do. Once you've developed, you've got your license, as long as, you know, you do no harm, then I think they should allow you to do different things, including experiment with your patients, should the patient agree. And that's not happening. So when it comes to the medical profession, it's the authorities that I blame, not the healthcare providers. They'd like to try some of this. Their hands are tied. They don't want to lose their jobs.
I would agree. Yep.
When it comes to the government, they have blindfolders on. And once again, I think they're pressured by the telecom industry not to make any changes. The guidelines, just as an example, the guidelines in Canada for radio frequency radiation are 10 million microwatts per meter squared. That's 10 million microwatts per meter squared. The levels that cause heart palpitations in the people we worked with is less than 1 microwatt per meter squared. So we're dealing, you know, it just does not make any sense at all. We don't need these.
There are some countries that have made some improvements, like I think it's France and maybe Sweden have made some changes.
Well, Sweden was the first one to actually recognize electrohypersensitivity, and they have made changes both for radio frequency and for low frequency electromagnetic field. They have some of the best guidelines. Russia, Eastern European countries, you know, they have a socialist healthcare system. And so they're trying to save money. And the pharmaceutical industry hasn't got the power over them, thank God. You know, so they're trying all sorts of different things. And they're the leaders in this, as far as I'm concerned. That's migrated to Germany through the union between East and West Germany. And now that's coming to some of Western Europe as well. So it's beginning, the floodgates are beginning to open. And, you know, I don't want to get too political here, but with Trump being, you know, the president-elect and him recommending Bobby Kennedy to look at healthcare, I think that could potentially change everything because Bobby Kennedy has a very open mind. He recognizes how important, you know, food is, and additives are a real problem. There's problems with vaccines. Not all vaccines are bad, but some of the recent vaccines that they're using haven't been tested appropriately, and they're not safe and effective as far as the research is showing. Yet some of the health authorities, the CDC, for example, Health Canada, they're still recommending that pregnant women get vaccinated, that they vaccinate infants, which in my mind is absolutely ludicrous. I'm not a vaccine expert, but I have been following this. And we even did a study on COVID in some of our research. And we found that in the United States, the states that had 5G millimeter waves activated had a doubling of the rate of cancer incidence and cancer deaths compared to states that didn't have 5G. So this rollout of 5G is simply going to exacerbate many of the chronic illnesses that we're already facing.
Oh my goodness. this is tough information to take in because, you know, we're all surrounded by this technology. If we have talked about solutions, do you see any ray of hope at all, Magda, where this situation can improve unless we actually just take it upon ourselves to make the change?
Well, definitely. You know, I'm an environmental toxicologist, and I've studied, you know, acid rain, metal pollution. You know, I teach about asbestos and all of that. And in every single case, once the evidence becomes so overwhelming, and once the population recognizes this, the government has to respond. They're reluctant to respond because they don't know what to do in some cases. But there are all sorts of things that you can do. You can actually minimize your exposure within your own home considerably. And even reducing it rather than eliminating it is beneficial. So anything you can do to reduce your exposure, and that includes the way you use your cell phone, you know, whether or not you have Wi-Fi, whether or not you turn Wi-Fi off at night, whether you shield your smart meter, for example. So there's all sorts of things that you can do to minimize your exposure. And every single one of those steps is going to help improve the health of your family.
And you talked earlier about schools. What can we do to help protect our children?
We have to get Wi-Fi at schools. We can wire everything. If you don't take the Wi-Fi out, another thing you can do is simply have classrooms where the teacher can turn the Wi-Fi on and off when they're being used. So you might have a period where you say, okay, for the next 10 minutes, you know, people can go on the internet and download whatever they need to download, and then the Wi-Fi gets shut off. Schools have, you know, brick walls that, you know, concrete walls that are pretty thick. So the movement of Wi-Fi through a thick concrete wall is much less than through a narrow brick wall. And so by turning the Wi-Fi off in a classroom, that would really reduce the exposure in that classroom, even though there's other parts of the school that might have it on. So we really have
Yeah. And then you'll see the behavior of the children improve, their learning abilities improve. I mean, there's a whole list of symptoms. You talked about headaches. I mean, there's even vision problems, pain, coordination. We talked about sleep, heart palpitations, fatigue, digestive issues. I mean, pain in the extremities and so on. I mean, so many symptoms can be triggered by all this dirty electricity. But at a cellular level, what is happening? If you can just tell us briefly about that. I understand that all of this dirty electricity can actually interfere with our calcium channels. So obviously that will have an effect on our health at many different levels, including our muscular health.
That's right. I mean, this affects us at the cellular level. I went to a really fascinating medical meeting where there was brilliant medical doctors, you know, trying all sorts of different techniques. Like they really thought outside the box. And there was one doctor there who made a statement. This was about, almost 15 years ago now. So, and it really struck me as being important. He said, when he treats patients, and he was an elderly doctor in his 80s and was still working. He said, when he treats patients, he looks for three things. He said, one, do they have all the nutrients they require? All the minerals, vitamins, that sort of thing, because we're not getting enough of it in our food. And he said, and if they're lacking anything, I supply it, which makes sense. And I've heard that that's quite common. He said, the second thing I look at is whether or not there's toxins either in their environment or in their body. And if there are, then we try to remove them in a safe, you know, way. And that makes sense at all. And usually most doctors, those are the two things they look for. But he came up with a third thing. And this is what really surprised me. He said, the third question I ask is, are the cells in the body communicating with each other? Are the cells in the body communicating with each other? I thought that was kind of an interesting concept. Of course, they have to communicate because we're a system. We have to, you know, the fact that I move my hand here, my other hand needs to know that, right? Or if I'm holding something. But we can't communicate chemically fast enough for everything to happen. And I thought maybe we can look at this not from a chemical perspective, which is what he was using, but from an electromagnetic perspective. And so we asked three questions. One, is your body getting all the electromagnetic frequencies it requires? And that includes sunlight. It includes the Earth's magnetic field, you know, includes human resonance. So we're getting natural frequencies from the Earth that are maintaining our circadian rhythm, which you know a lot about and you do a lot of research on. So that's one thing. So are we getting all the essential frequencies? And if we're not, we supply them by red light therapy, pulse electromagnetic field therapy, whatever. The second one, or providing the Schumann resonance, for example. The second one, are we exposed to toxic electromagnetic energy? And that's what I do research on, right? So, of course, we're exposed to toxic energy. That's what we've been talking about here. And the third one, are our cells communicating electromagnetically. And Dr. Ross Ady, back in the 1980s, I think, said our cells are whispering to each other electromagnetically. And since then, we've heard from Dr. Fritz Popp in Germany that our body is producing biophotons, and these are very weak forms of light. And he believes that our cells are communicating each other through biophotons. And if there's anything in the environment that interferes with that communication, it can disrupt everything. And that's what I think is happening. That's why even very low frequencies are affecting the body, because they're interfering with our cell-to-cell communication or our organ-to-cell communication. And because of that, our body begins to just go into some sort of dysfunction. And eventually that shows up as a disease or a disorder.
Do you think grounding can offset some of this, either by going outside in your bare feet or buying grounding mats? Is that something people can use to try to boost this communication?
Okay, grounding, I think, is very important. I have some issues with the way grounding is being sold to the public. You're encouraged to buy grounding mats that you put on your bed. So there's a silk, there's some sort of metal in them, and you plunk them into a grounding receptacle. So it only has one plug and goes into the ground receptacle. Sometimes that could be polluted with ground current, unnatural ground current, or with even dirty electricity if there's some wiring issues in your home. And so initially you might feel some benefit, but over time what people are telling me is they begin to feel ill and they have to disconnect the grounding. What I strongly recommend is that you go and ground yourself outside. You know, you walk in bare feet whenever you can. Even in winter, if you could just go out and, you know, hug a tree and step outside and get that fresh air and be exposed to sunlight without any kind of sunscreen, that's going to be your best medicine. So I don't recommend grounding mats, although they might be beneficial in certain circumstances if you have really pure electricity coming, or, you know, in your home and you don't have
it. Can you use a grounding rod? Would a grounding rod be a little bit better a choice, either through the ground or maybe through your copper pipes under your kitchen sink or what have you?
Except if you have dirty electricity coming through and it comes through your copper pipes, right? So we found that if you're in an area close to a power line, you get that electricity coming through the ground into your home. And so that's not healthy either. But a grounding rod could potentially help if you don't have a ground current problem, implying artificial electromagnetic fields flowing through the ground. If you don't have a ground current problem, then that could be beneficial.
And there are testing devices you can get to check for that, right?
That's right. Unfortunately, measuring ground current the technology is quite expensive. It's several thousand dollars. When it comes to testing some of the other things I've been talking about, the magnetic field, the electric field, the radio frequency, you can get things that are just a few hundred dollars. So they're much more affordable.
Okay, good. Well, I'll try and feature some of these products on my website. I'll get in touch with Safe Living and maybe feature some of them, so people have an idea of what they can buy. I think we can probably start winding down here. We've covered so much information, Magda. Oh my goodness, you're just such an encyclopedia of knowledge here. Is there anything else that you can share with us to try and wake people up to how important this subject is?
Well, you know, we have to take our health into our own hands, I think. And if we go to doctors, we have to ensure that they're really on our side rather than trying to follow some narrow path, you know, whether you're dealing with cancer or reproductive problems or electrohypersensitivity. There's a lot you can do. There's a lot of good information on the internet. Unfortunately, there's some bad information as well. But if you go to some reputable websites like the Electrosensitive Society, there's so much, there's a wealth of information there that will really benefit you. There's also healing therapies that you can use, the light therapies, different types of light therapies, different types of pulsed electromagnetic field therapies that can actually help people who aren't too sensitive. Some very sensitive people can't tolerate them initially until they get to a certain level. And we come up with something called R squared ID cubed. And all of those stand for what you can do if you're electrosensitive. And I have a YouTube video on that that I can share with you, Pam. And if you want to put it on your website, people can go to that. It explains what electrosensitivity is, what the symptoms are, what you can do to help yourself based on what made you sensitive in the first place. And what could make you sensitive could be something like mercury fillings, because that's a neurotoxin, aluminum in your body. Lyme disease usually creates an electrosensitivity, an impaired immune system. So depending on what caused your sensitivity, those are the things you have to go to that root cause, treat them, and then eliminate your exposure, get rid of the mental stress that you're dealing with. And there's auricular chromotherapy that you've become aware of recently that will help with that. And once you start doing these things, your body will heal. Your body has this amazing ability to heal. So once you start healing yourself, sharing that information, hopefully it will get out long enough that the government officials we currently have will retire, and then new blood will come in there who is much more open to these novel ideas.
Hear, hear. Yes, I hope we can see a transformation happening soon, a revolution, if you will, because we have to take our health back into our own hands. As I said earlier in another interview I did, I said we're moving from healthcare to self-care. I see it so evident in the last couple of years. People are so frustrated with our system right now that they're very disillusioned, angry even, and you know, it's leaving people with no choice but to go towards this self-care model. And it's thanks to your research that people will have something to turn to as a solution to why they might be feeling so terrible right now. So I congratulate you and thank you for all of your research. I've known you for years, and I know you've been a trailblazer on all of these subjects. And I can't thank you enough, Magda, honestly. I mean, without you, I don't know where we would be. At least through your research, there's a growing awareness. So keep up the great work. And I hope to get you back on the show at some point. That would be wonderful.
I'd love that, Pam. Thank you so much. And thank you for sharing this information. I mean, that's how we benefit society and life.
Thank you for taking your valuable time to join us today. The information provided on my website, community forum, and podcast is intended for informational purposes only and should not be construed as medical advice. We are not licensed medical professionals, and the content shared here is not a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you are seeking health advice or have specific medical concerns, we strongly encourage you to consult with a qualified medical doctor or healthcare provider. They are trained to evaluate your individual health needs and provide personalized recommendations tailored to your unique circumstances. By accessing and using my website, participating in my member forum, or listening to my podcast, you agree to acknowledge and abide by this disclaimer. We do not assume any responsibility or liability for actions taken based on the information provided herein.